where he'd been powered down for too brief a time.
This is highly irregular. Princess Leia would undoubtedly wish to be consulted.
Probably. However, the more Joff thought about this, the more he was sure this was the right time. And he hoped that wasn't just his own wishful thinking. If Rinriven Dai has spies here on Ryloth, and he probably does, he's most likely to be watching Senator Organa herself. Not us. Which means our best chance of doing this without being observed is acting now, while the Senator's somewhere else. Although Corey's expression still looked dubious, she finally nodded. 3PO said,
I'm sure we're making a terrible mistake.
Only if I screw it up. Joff brought the engines online and felt the mirror bright shiver around them, ready for action.
And I'm not going to screw it up.
They soared away from Ryloth, a bright streak in its night sky, leaving the hazy blanket of the planet's atmosphere to just skim orbit. Normally, vessels stayed cleared of the narrow bands of satellites circling the equator, but Joff pulled in close as Corey double-checked each against the specs that would help them identify likely targets. Within minutes, the viewer began to ping with multiple red dots. Satellites that might be working for Rinriven. Joff skimmed closer to the first one, feeling as if he were threading the ship through an asteroid belt. Silvery satellites dotted the space around them as he matched orbital speed.
3PO, you can process the data coming in from one of these if I hijack the signal for a few seconds, right?
C-3PO cocked his golden head.
I function primarily as a protocol droid and translator, advising Princess Leia on matters of higher diplomatic importance.
But you speak to other machines, so you can understand these satellites.
If not, Joff's day was about to get a whole lot more difficult. If the droid could have sniffed, he would have.
If you so require, sir.
I do.
Joff slipped in even tighter, until the satellite was practically close enough to touch the Mirror Bright's gleaming white hull. Just as he was about to tell C-3PO to get started, however, an idea took shape in his mind. The satellites have to be sending information to Rinriven regularly. But there's no way Rinriven's staying in one place. Not while he's wanted like this. We don't need to just retrieve the data. We need to tap into it permanently.
Thinking fast, Joff said, Hey, 3PO, if you can get the satellite to give us the data now, can you reprogram it to keep sending us the data going forward? Including the primary destination for the signal?
I could, sir, but that will be far more time-consuming.
Corey broke in.
If we take too long up here, we could be detected. That would blow the whole thing.
Yeah, but that's the only way to be sure we're tracking Rinriven Dai.
She nodded, but her expression remained troubled.
Senator Casterfo gave us specific orders.
That's just because he hadn't thought of this yet.
We should stick to the plan for now and ask Senator Organa about your idea later.
Interacting with the satellites twice would be way more likely to trip any alarms, right, 3PO?
Joff turned toward the droid.
Yes, sir. But Senator Casterfo's orders were quite clear. We shouldn't disobey them.
Joff would have thumped C-3PO upside his metal head if he wouldn't have bruised his hand in the process.
We're not disobeying his orders. We're improving them.
Joff, don't,
Corey pleaded. He'd gotten into the habit of thinking of her as someone closer to his own age, but the alarm in her voice reminded him that she was only 16.
It's too big a risk.
It's too good a chance to waste, Joff made up his mind. We're doing this. I'm noting for the record that I proceeded over both your objections. If something goes wrong, it's on me.
C-3PO looked as though he were about to blow a circuit.
If we're captured by Rinriven's thugs, we'll be doomed.
They're not going to fly up here and grab us in the act, Joff said, mentally adding,
At least I doubt it.
Is there some kind of sleep mode, something like that you can put the satellites into? That would slow down any alarm activation. Resigned, the droid said,
I'll try my best, sir.
The work turned out to be at the edge of C-3PO's capabilities, but he could manage it. Over and over, Joff wheeled the mirror bright toward a satellite, flying with the precision necessary to bring them close enough for signal range, and let C-3PO coax the satellites into sleep mode. Then, while the data was being downloaded, they could input codes suggesting that the satellites do a little extra work the next time they broadcast their signals. Although they worked as quickly as possible, the delicate flying and C-3PO's complex task meant that every single satellite got within seconds of activating automatic alarms before they were able to detach. The suspense made Corey look seasick, and 3PO's complaints were interrupted only by his panic. But Joff enjoyed himself immensely. A challenge to his skills, a mission with some meaning to it, and following his gut to come up with a better idea than he'd had before. This was what Joff had dreamed about on Gatalenta. He hadn't had this much fun since he'd piloted his X-Wing down into the caverns of Bastatha. That feeling of exhilaration lasted until later that night, after they'd landed, and Princess Leia found out what they'd done. "Let me get this straight," Leia paced in front of Joff, who stood rigidly at attention in front of the ship's cockpit. In the far corner of the main room, Corey and C-3PO stood by silently. Corey's worry and sympathy were as obvious as the droid's unspoken "I told you so." "You took it upon yourself to improve Casterfo's orders."
"Yes, ma'am. The idea came to me in a moment of inspiration. I felt you would have okayed my actions if you'd been present."
The princess stopped mid-step and gave him a steely stare. "But I wasn't present, Lieutenant Seastriker. And you shouldn't presume to guess what I would and wouldn't approve."
"Yes, ma'am. I know. But..."
Maybe she hadn't quite figured out what they'd managed to do up there.
"We're going to get updates on Rinriven Dai's location from now on. That's gotta be worth the risk, right?"
"That's not your call to make, Lieutenant. You could have exposed this entire operation."
"Yes, ma'am."
Joff wondered just how many demerits he was going to receive for this. Surely she wouldn't bust him back down to Ensign, would she? She continued, "You're here to work with me on this mission as I command. Have I made myself perfectly clear?" By now, Joff's spirits had sunk down to the soles of his boots.
"Yes, ma'am."
A few moments of silence passed, during which Joff awaited his orders to get his butt back in the cockpit. Until Princess Leia said, "It was a good idea." Joff grinned as he lifted his head. While the princess had folded her arms across her chest, her expression had changed from stern to intrigued. He ventured,
"Yes, ma'am. I mean, thank you."
"Next time you have a similar moment of inspiration, you run it by me first. You've got good instincts, but they won't help you much if you don't learn to work as part of a team." Princess Leia nodded toward the cockpit. "You strung the net for us, Seastriker. Let's see if you've caught anything yet." Joff eagerly sat down in the pilot's chair and brought up the satellite signals. Princess Leia took the navigator's position, and Corey and C-3PO came up behind. A few lines of small green type began to appear on the screen.
"Not a whole lot yet, but we can pinpoint the location the signal's being sent to."
"Excellent," the princess said.
"Oh, it was nothing. Merely some complex programming performed very quickly indeed,"
C-3PO said with obvious pride.
"I'm always happy to have been of service."
Throwing a dirty glance over his shoulder, Joff forced himself to concentrate on the work at hand. When he had the data, he fed it into the navigation computer to see which location it would spit out. Within moments, a planet came up, one Joff had never heard of before.
"Sibensko. Expansion region in largely centrist space. Do you know it, Senator?"
"No," Leia said. "But I have a feeling we'll all get to know it before long." Chapter 17. Ransom Casterfo was relieved to find Daxam 4's weather warmer on his second day. The bright sunlight helped ease the slight nervousness within his gut. Nervousness Greer Sonnel seemed determined to increase.
You shouldn't have agreed to a meeting without me,
Greer said, not for the first time that morning, as they walked across the spaceport toward the speeder bike rentals.
I'm supposed to be your chief of staff, remember? Why not throw your rank around? Insist on taking someone along. You don't strike me as the type to forget your senatorial privileges.
Arlise Hadrosian doesn't strike me as the type to approve of anyone throwing their rank around in a situation where she considers herself to be the highest authority. Ransom glanced backward toward their G-Con courier. Fly far away enough for them to miss you, close enough to reach me quickly if I call for you. That's precaution enough. Greer's dark eyes searched his face. For what, Ransom couldn't guess.
Do you really trust these people so much?
I don't trust them at all, Ransom said. But I believe that I can get them to trust me.
And if you're wrong?
Then you get to be smug, and I get to find out just how fast these speeder bikes fly. He'd rented a top-of-the-line model again, this time choosing a sporty one painted brilliant red. Ransom wanted to attract attention today. He wanted to come across as young, successful, enthusiastic, guileless, and someone who would look at acquiring an imperial artifact as reason to celebrate. And if that meant he got to drive a very flashy speeder bike? Duty, he thought with a wry smile. Always duty. As he slung his leg astride his bike and adjusted his goggles, Greer said,
If the pilots I saw last night are tied to Hadrosian's organization, you could be getting in over your head.
How else can I learn to swim? Ransom sighed. I don't mean to be glib. It doesn't matter if I'm getting in over my head or not. I intend to follow this mission, wherever it leads.
All right.
Greer's tone sounded different then. Respectful, almost. But Ransom had no time to assess that. He had an appointment to keep. He gunned the motor, leaned forward, and zoomed toward the western wastes, orange sand swirling in his wake. Hadrosian's compound stood alone in the wastes, a set of buildings at least 40 kilometers away from any other human structures. Several dozen people were working on personal spacecraft. Starfighters, apparently modern and sophisticated, unlike the average militia fleet. Everyone wore matching black coveralls, and none of them took particular note of his arrival, or they all tried to seem as if they didn't. As Ransom parked his bike, Arlise Hadrosian walked from the largest building, her silver-streaked hair drawn back in a tight bun that accentuated the sharpness of her features. Her smile showed the bared teeth of a predator with prey between its jaws.
Senator Castelfo, you honor us with your presence.
The honor is mine, Ms. Hadrosian, as long as the helmet is, too. Ransom gave her his most winning smile. It was, he knew, a good one, highly effective on most women and more than a few men. Although he was no womanizer, he understood very well how to be charming when necessary. Hadrosian laughed.
Greedy for your prize. Well, come and see it then.
As they stepped into the building, Ransom's eyes required a moment to adjust to the relative darkness. Inside, on the far side of a long black table, stood another dozen people, all apparently waiting for him. In the center of the table sat the helmet. Ransom approached it with awe. The brilliant red was only a shade too light to match the color of blood, and it shone as pristinely as it must have in Palpatine's royal chamber. He tugged off his riding gloves, but he didn't reach for the helmet. Hadrosian had to be the one to hand it over. This had belonged to her late brother. The transfer had to seem as sacred to him as it must feel to her. She stepped to his side, hands clasped behind her back.
Magnificent, isn't it?
Breathtaking. Ransom could already see it on his office wall.
Imagine how often this mask was in the presence of the Emperor himself.
Palpatine had been near this mask, had seen it with his own eyes. Ransom felt an unpleasant, seasick stirring within him. He preferred to think of the officers of the line, the common soldiers whose valor could not be questioned even if their cause was unjust. When he thought of the Emperor and Vader at all, he thought of them not as the Empire's backbone, but its pollution, its downfall.
Here.
Hadrosian took the helmet into her hands and held it for one silent, reverent moment before turning to Ransom.
Put it on.
Ransom paused long enough to feel the heft of the helmet, its surprising weight. Then he slipped it over his head to see the world through it. His first thought was that the eye slits were deceptively narrow. Visibility was far better within the mask than any observer would first think. Perhaps the designer hoped to instill a false sense of security in those who sought to do the Emperor harm.
Imagine it, Senator Casterfo.
Hadrosian's voice had become low and sweet, like a mother encouraging her child to daydream.
You stand at the right hand of the Emperor. Lord Vader himself is with you, and all the Moffs. You stand aboard the Death Star, and this time there will be no errors, no accidents, no disloyalty. You will share in the Empire's power and glory forever. How does it feel?
The high stone walls surrounding the labor camp. Air thick with soot and smoke from the factory chimneys. Ransom's small hands raw and chapped from polishing the blaster casings. The stink of the chemicals absorbed into his skin. Hunger clawing inside his belly. His father trying to explain to Lord Vader the impossibility of the quotas set for them. That harsh, metallic breathing. The mortal terror that made Ransom vomit right there on the floor. And he'd thought that was it for sure. Now Vader would kill him. But Vader didn't care about a small boy's fear. He only cared about the quotas. His hand around Papa's throat. The way he made Ransom watch his father gasp and gag and plead. How Vader had thrown Papa down like trash. How he had hated Vader then. If he'd had a force pike like one of the Emperor's guards, he would have swung it with all his might and claimed Vader's head for his own. Glorious, Ransom whispered. It would have been glorious.
Ah, yes.
Hadrosian's smile widened.
I see my brother's helmet has found a true home.
Indeed it has. He slipped the mask off again, grateful to be liberated of its weight. If I only had a force pike, the picture would be complete. Hadrosian arched an eyebrow as she looked around at the others gathered before the table. By now, most of them were smiling, too.
If you'd like a force pike, Senator.
You have one of the royal guard force pikes? Ransom could scarcely believe such a prize could still exist. Hadrosian shook her head no.
Would that I could offer you something so fine. But we have other force pikes. We train with them here, my fellow Amaxine warriors and I, as part of our reenactments, you see.
Fascinating. Ransom knew some people met for Imperial drill and battle reenactments, but he also knew real weapons were forbidden at such events. If Hadrosian was speaking of an operational force pike, not a mock-up, then the Amaxine warriors weren't reenacting battles. They were training for them.
Come,
she said, gesturing toward the door.
If you're not in a rush to take your helmet back to Hosnian Prime, we have much to show you.
No rush whatsoever. His heart thumped harder. The situation had begun to shift around him, and he could not yet guess what form it would take. When he and Hadrosian walked out into the clearing at the center of the Amaxine warriors' camp, the others all gathered around, any pretense of inattention abandoned. Amid all the utilitarian black coveralls, Ransom's tailored green jacket and pants seemed gaudy, frivolous, citified. Certainly some of the Amaxine warriors thought so. Their gazes were more amused than sharp. Hadrasian walked to a long, corrugated metal locker and flipped open the top.
Force pikes,
she said, taking two from the locker.
At their strongest setting, capable of cutting through durasteel. At their lowest, capable of causing excruciating pain.
She tossed one of the pikes toward Ransom, who caught it in his dominant left hand. Fortunately, the pike hadn't yet been activated, but he remained vividly aware of its power and its dark legacy. Force pikes had been used for torture. Their shocks could cause paralysis or even death. Researchers were unsure whether the deaths were caused by electrical voltage or from the intensity of the pain alone.
Do you know how to fight with force pikes, Senator Casterfo?
Hadrasian handed the other pike to a young man with tan skin and close-shorn hair.
I've studied techniques in old hollows, that sort of thing. But I've never had the opportunity to hold one before.
Then let us be the ones to teach you.
With that, Hadrasian nodded at the other young man, who immediately activated his pike. Ransom did the same. The low hum of the force pike seemed to thump its way into the sand beneath his feet as Hadrasian said,
Begin.
And now he's going to get himself killed.
Greer cursed under her breath as she saw the scene via the speeder bike's holocam, which she'd patched into the courier's comm systems. As she punched the engines, zooming toward the Amaxine camp, she kept one eye on the holocam images. Casterfo was being led to the center of a broad enclosure, along with someone who seemed likely to be his opponent or his executioner.
I thought he might be taken hostage. I thought they might try to brainwash him. But I never thought he'd get himself challenged to a duel. The guy has a rare talent for suicide.
She could get there within 5 minutes, fly in low, spray the perimeter with what little defensive fire the G-Con courier could muster. Would the strike team she'd seen practicing the night before scramble to defend their camp? If so, they'd have her outnumbered and outgunned. Her heart raced in her chest. Greer would die rather than abandon the senator she was sworn to protect, but her sacrifice wouldn't save him. She'd have to count on taking the Amaxine warriors by surprise. Hopefully, Casterfo could keep himself alive long enough for her to reach him. The holoscreen continued to flicker. As she watched from the corner of her eye, Greer realized that Casterfo held himself straight. His chin was high, and his hands were in ideal fighting position on the force pike's grip. He actually wanted to see this thing through. That left her with a decision. Get over there and save his life, whether he wanted it or not. Or let him try? Preserve the cover he'd managed to create among the Amaxine warriors and run the risk of getting a senator killed? Did he have it in him? Was there even the possibility that Ransom Casterfo could survive? Greer eased off the engines and turned the courier back toward her original cycle. She might be a fool, and a fool who would soon have senatorial blood on her hands, but she'd give Casterfo what he so obviously wanted. The chance to save his own skin. Surrounded by a ring of spectators with black coveralls and killer's smiles, Ransom shrugged off his cloak, passing his force pike from hand to hand while he did so. As his grip adjusted to the hum of vibration, he took stock of the field of battle.
Sand, hard-packed, rather dry. Topography nearly completely flat. Sun coming from almost directly overhead, so neither of us can use the glare to our advantage. Opponent 3 or 4 centimeters shorter than I am. Excellent.
Hadrasian clasped her hands behind her back, like a mother proudly watching her children win their games.
Only to the first landed blow, I think. We wouldn't want either of you to hurt yourself.
One blow from a force pike would be enough to fell a man, but it would be over quickly. Already Ransom sensed that the purpose of this fight was not to threaten or kill him, only to test him. If he proved he wasn't soft, if he could simply hold his own, he would have won the respect and trust of the Amaxine warriors. It didn't matter whether he won or lost. So he decided to kick the guy's ass just for the fun of it. Ransom had studied old hollows of Force Pike battles. That much of what he'd told Hadrossian was true. He simply hadn't mentioned his lessons in Hosnian martial arts and in quarterstaff combat. Nor did he speak of the year between his parents' death and his adoption, during which he'd learned how hard you could fight for a crust of bread when that bit of food might mean the difference between your life and death. He took dueling position, eyes locked on his Amaxine opponent as he thought,
"Now, you will know me."
Hadrossian said,
"Begin."
The Amaxine leapt forward, a foolish attempt at intimidation. Ransom sidestepped him easily. Although the Force Pike hummed insistently in his hand, he held back.
"Watch his movements. Learn his tricks."
A high, slashing stroke toward Ransom's shoulder was parried with one brute thrust, enough to throw the Amaxine back, but show him nothing else of how Ransom fought. Electrical sizzle drowned out the reaction of the crowd, if there was one. Ransom cared nothing about them, only about the person he was fighting. His opponent appeared simple to read. This man was impulsive, inclined to show off.
Why not give him a chance?
Ransom stepped back into another of the formal dueling positions, one knee forward, the other leg extended backward, and held his Force Pike out in a horizontal line in front of his chest. The Amaxine grinned, following suit. The next step in formal dueling technique would lead them into some low spiral sweeps, a way of judging finesse and aim. As Ransom had expected, the Amaxine went straight into it, eager for his chance to show how much he knew. And that provided an opening. The very moment the Amaxine finished his move, Ransom swung his pike up hard, a crude move that nearly knocked his opponent's Force Pike from his hand. The Amaxine compensated quickly enough to hang on, but he had been startled, thrown off his form. So Ransom kept going, rough hit after rough hit, not giving his opponent one moment to readjust. The younger man was trapped on the defensive. Ransom knew what to do when you had an opponent in this position. Show no mercy. Again. Again. Ransom kept the blows coming in underhanded, never opening up his torso to the assault. He struck the other Force Pike so hard, the clash of vibration jarred his bones, but he would not stop. As he always had during his training, Ransom called up the faces of those he wished were in front of his blade now. The supervisor at the labor camp. That boy who had stolen the tiny box of meat jerky Ransom had been hiding in the lean-to where he slept. Darth Vader. Always Lord Vader, if only fate had given him a chance to take that villain's head. His last blow came up so hard it knocked the Force Pike from the Amaxine's hands. Ransom slashed forward, almost blinded by the haze of anger and the past. But he caught himself. His last thrust stopped perhaps 1 centimeter short of his opponent's neck.
"You said to the first blow, Ms. Hadrossian."
Ransom did not take his eyes away from the Amaxine, who stared up at him with obvious dread.
"But I would prefer not to cause harm to any of your warriors. I believe they have another purpose to fulfill."
With that, he stepped back, deactivated the Force Pike, and bowed. After a pause long enough to make Ransom wonder if they'd insist on a blow after all, Hadrossian began to applaud. The others followed her, their grins widening, and even the defeated Amaxine nodded in apparent admiration.
"You continue to surprise me, Senator Castefo."
Hadrossian stepped forward and put one hand on his shoulder.
"They claim that the air on Hosnian Prime is thin, that it weakens the blood, but not yours."
"No."
Ransom took a deep breath and looked up into Daxam's pale sky.
"Not mine."
Hadrosian says they've got at least 50 starfighters at this location alone, with at least 2 pilots fully rated to fly each one. Ransom Casterfo sat in the cockpit of the G-Con courier, going through the pre-flight checklist for Greer, while she hurriedly logged everything he was saying. He'd insisted he had to get it out right away or the details might escape him. She gave no exact numbers, but to judge by the exercises she mentioned, the maneuvers and drills they've performed, I would estimate approximately 1,000 Amaxine warriors are linked through the Daxam 4 base. But they are only a fraction of the whole. Greer swore under her breath.
How many bases can they have?
It was a rhetorical question, but Casterfo had managed to uncover the answer. Only a handful, 5 or 6, all but one of those even smaller than the base on Daxam 4. But one base is their true center, the hub of their activity, and the place from which they'll strike. Until then, Greer had hoped her misgivings from the night before were no more than paranoia. But she had seen true, and Casterfo knew it as well. The Amaxine warriors meant to draw blood. Whose blood did they want?
Did you get the base's location?
Some obscure planet in the expansion region called Cybensko. I've never heard of it.
I have,
Greer said. Casterfo looked up from the console at that. His hand paused on the fuel gauge. When he raised an eyebrow, she continued,
Free traders from Pamarth used to fly through there sometimes. It's a water world. No landmasses to speak of, but there are large areas where the ocean isn't very deep. Traders built undersea cities as bases for the kind of commerce you'd rather keep secret.
Casterfo drew himself upright, seemingly prim once more. Criminal activity, you mean?
Not originally. Unless you're counting any business not monitored by the Empire as criminal. I'm pretty sure a few rebel pilots stocked up there from time to time. It was a place where you could be sure of remaining hidden.
Greer racked her memory for any more details, but what little she knew came from old fireside stories.
Since the Empire's fall, legitimate traffic moved out of Cybensko.
Leaving the scum behind. Casterfo leaned back in the high, narrow pilot's chair, clearly deep in thought. Cybensko sounds like the sort of place where a would-be mobster might encounter a would-be warlord.
Exactly.
Casterfo rose from the pilot's seat, motioning for Greer to reclaim her position. Princess Leia's team remains on Ryloth, do they not?
So far as I know, Greer said. But we haven't been able to raise them again. And they haven't sent us any information about the spy satellites yet. The radiation interference must still be too strong.
Then we'll wait. He nodded at her and turned back toward his cabin. Meeting over. Greer couldn't let it go at that.
I saw the duel.
Casterfo stopped, his hands on either side of the doorway that led to the rest of the ship. You did?
I watched it begin via the holocam monitor. Thought about flying in to save you, but then you looked like you knew what you were doing.
Greer realized she was smiling.
And you did. Casterfo, that was one hell of a fight.
He looked over his shoulder at her, unexpectedly vulnerable to such simple praise. Do you think so?
You fight like a man of Pamarth.
That was the highest praise Greer could give, though probably Casterfo wouldn't get it.
I'd spar with you if I could.
He got it. His grin was more genuine than she'd seen from him before. I'm honored. First priority, to inform someone in the Senate of what he had learned. Leia deserved to be the first person to hear the truth, but she remained incommunicado on Ryloth. Besides, Ransom reasoned, as he sat down in his narrow courier bunk, another centrist senator needed to hear about this. To judge by the star charts he'd just pulled up, Cybensko also lay within an area of space with mostly centrist worlds. When the populists heard about this, the mass of them would not be as judicious as Leia. They would begin crying conspiracy, and the political situation could disintegrate rapidly.
But if he could form a small coalition of centrist senators who would back these findings, then this could become an opportunity for union rather than dissent. But whom should he reach out to? Anyone much more powerful than him might well attempt to claim the investigation himself. Unlikely, given Princess Leia's role, but far from impossible. Anyone much less powerful than him would be of no use. He needed a peer. One he could convince. Preferably one who owed him a favor. Lady Carice Indian. Of course. Ransom smiled as the idea registered. His speech in support of her motion to elect a first senator had helped to carry the day, and he felt certain Lady Carice knew that as well as he did himself. Her planet, Arcanus, was wealthy and influential. She had every reason to support and believe him, and the ambition to see this through. Resolved, he put through a communication request. Assuming it would be hours at least before a return signal came in, he began readying himself for some much-needed sleep, kicking off his boots and peeling off his socks, and then the light began to flash. When he answered, Lady Carice's face appeared. She wore an elaborate tiara and a frown.
Senator Castatho?
Lady Carice, I wouldn't have dreamed I would reach you on Hosnian Prime so quickly.
I'm not on Hosnian Prime. I'm on Beeren, and rather busy at the moment.
She gestured behind her, where the glint of precious metals outlined elaborate grillwork over arched windows.
The third stage of my inauguration is about to begin. The anointing will commence any moment.
Ransom asked himself if he wanted to know, decided he didn't, and pushed on.
I'll keep this brief, then. Our investigation into Rinriven Dai's cartel has led us to suspect a connection to a paramilitary group known as the Amaxine Warriors, one that might represent a real threat.
A paramilitary group? A few bellicose men making themselves feel courageous by shooting at inanimate targets that will never shoot back? Senator Castatho, do you hear yourself?
She shook her head as though in pity.
I'm sure some people are willing to break the law to buy themselves a beat-up old X-Wing or some such. There were always a few who resisted the demilitarization efforts after the war, but never so many that they warranted any concern. To claim this group of toy soldiers forms a threat to the New Republic, an organization of thousands of worlds. You sound ridiculous. Hasn't anyone else already told you as much?
When she put it that way, it sounded worse than ridiculous. But Ransom trusted his instincts.
You're the first I've spoken to.
Well, Senator Castatho, I'm truly flattered. And to be quite honest, relieved. I'd hate to see you sabotage your political career before it's even properly begun. And if you waste any more time on this, you'll never get anything else done. Need I remind you we have an important election coming up?
No, you needn't.
He gave the words just enough emphasis to remind her that the election wouldn't be happening without him. But Lady Carice seemed too caught up in whatever ceremony was beginning to take much notice.
Here come the wardens of the sanctum with the anointing oils. I must go. Do try to move on, won't you? People like that never act. They only talk.
Her gloved hand skimmed across the screen as she cut communication. When the screen went dark, Ransom sighed and flopped down on the thin mattress. Would any other centrist senator respond more effectively? He had begun to doubt it. Apathy and inaction had infected both sides of the Senate. Only he and Leia seemed to see the potential disaster looming on the horizon. Chapter 18. The Mirror Bright slipped free of Ryloth's gravity, and Joff could feel the increased liberty of the wings, the lack of atmospheric friction holding them back. He loved that moment, when a ship knew itself to be in space again. And the Mirror Bright was a beauty of a ship. Joff knew he'd probably never get another chance to fly her again. Greer would reclaim this chair the first chance she got, so he wanted to enjoy it while he could.
We're clear of Ryloth, ma'am,
he called back to Princess Leia. Ready to lay in a course back to Hosnian Prime. The princess said, not yet.
Not yet?
C-3PO toddled closer to the cockpit.
But your highness, we've promised to attend Senator Vickley's next gala. And of course your impending campaign will require due preparation.
I said, not yet. Princess Leia stepped around C-3PO to stand beside Joff, the many lights on the console illuminating her features in faint shades of red and gold. Run a scan on the satellites you hijacked the other day, Lieutenant. Let's see if Rinriven Dai is still on Sibensko. I suspect he stays on the move these days. Joff tuned into the satellite's signal, trying hard to keep his pride under wraps. Yeah, okay, he should have cleared things with her first, but what really mattered was that he'd had a good idea, she knew it was a good idea, and this investigation was finally getting somewhere. We're getting something. Okay, he's definitely changed locations already. The last signals went out to... Wait, that can't be right. He frowned. Harloff Minor?
Surely you must know Harloff Minor,
C-3PO insisted.
Why, it's very near Coruscant, a center of commerce and culture.
I know Harloff Minor, Joff said. It just doesn't seem like the kind of place where the head of a cartel would hang out. Princess Leia shook her head. Actually, it makes perfect sense. Rinriven Dai still hasn't been charged with any major crimes. Large, heavily traveled worlds like Harloff Minor? The officials there won't be on the lookout for him. The alerts about my near abduction on Bastatha won't even register on their scanners. She tapped her fingers on the console, deep in thought. That's not where Rinriven does business. That's where he goes when he wants to seem respectable, legitimate. So as long as he's there, he's not doing anything illegal? Joff said. When the princess nodded, he shrugged. Guess we have to wait until the satellites tell us something more interesting. That's interesting enough. The princess got to her feet. Lieutenant Seastriker, lay in a course for Harloff Minor. This mission was even better than he'd dared hope for. It was all Joff could do to keep from grinning.
Harloff Minor?
C-3PO protested.
Whatever are we to do there?
Princess Leia smiled back at them both as she returned to her cabin. We're inviting Rinriven Dai to dinner. Harloff Minor offered a variety of climates and cities for the discerning traveler, which meant that any number of galactic guides could recommend good restaurants. Leia selected a sophisticated yet informal place in one of the larger equatorial cities, both because of its excellent cuisine and because it offered private tables on small terraces. Any guest would be impressed by the view.
Splendid,
Rinriven said as he strode onto the terrace that evening, wearing black garments so exquisite Lady Carice Sindian might have asked for the name of his tailor.
Utterly splendid. Your taste is impeccable, Hot Slayer.
I'm glad we agree. On this, at least. Leia rose from her chair to greet him, the breezes tugging at the soft layers of her long green gown. Rinriven took her offered hand, bent, and kissed it. What Nikto's had for lips were rather rubbery, but he was doing the best he could.
On more than this, I hope.
I suppose we'll see.
Such a relief to know you weren't harmed in that terrible incident. They're calling it the napkin bombing, I hear. Dreadful.
Oddly, Rinriven didn't only sound sincere. He sounded angry, as if the bombers had insulted him personally.
Such a reckless, childish act. One should never use force when persuasion is adequate.
Leia raised an eyebrow. And what is it you think the bombers wanted to persuade us of?
Their own might,
Rinriven said with disgust.
Their determination to seize power by first destroying the Senate. And in the end, was it anything more than a nuisance? The greatest damage was to a mere statue.
His attitude toward the bombing and those responsible bore consideration. But Leia needed to steer him toward other matters now. Let's change the subject. Don't you think it would be a shame to waste such a beautiful evening?
You're right, of course.
He gave her his thin, polite smile, the one that so reminded her of Tarkin.
Such people aren't worth worrying about.
Leia gestured toward their table. Please, sit down. The restaurant terrace overlooked much of the city, its ornate architecture almost golden in the warm moonlight. A wide river snaked through the scene, capturing that light and reflecting it. Night had fallen, and the illuminated windows of the nearby buildings seemed to hang in the darkness like lanterns. I chose the menu, Leia said, though I have nothing to offer you as exquisite as the Tonaray wine. Rinriven inclined his leathery head.
Should I ever come across another bottle, I promise you it shall be yours.
No, the one glass was enough. You can't dwell on the past. Leia had always known this, had always been aware that she could never, ever look back. The server droids presented the meal. Tender meats cooked in delicate sauces, salads crisp as cool air, and soups thickened to savory perfection. She had arranged for a few kebabs of Nikto beetles, which she knew to be one of their favorite delicacies, but trusted Rinriven wouldn't insist she try it. Other topics interested him more.
To what do I owe this unexpected pleasure, Hutslayer?
There are so many topics we should discuss, Rinriven. I hardly know where to begin. Leia knew the precise fraction of a second she needed to time her pause. You realize, of course, that I had no idea Senator Casterfo would be arriving that day.
You looked as astonished as I felt.
Rinriven's chuckle didn't disguise his irritation.
But I know the type. Young, hungry for glory, not caring who gets in their way.
A few weeks ago I would have agreed with you, Leia thought. Apparently we never age out of making fools of ourselves. He still attached himself to the investigation like a Minock, except Minocks are easier to scrape off. So I thought I should seize the chance to speak to you without, shall we say, senatorial interference.
Very prudent of you.
Rinriven nodded. You've risen to prominence very quickly. So quickly that some would say you must have had help. She'd decided to spring that one question on him, accurate enough to put him on edge, but still so far removed from what they'd learned to date that Rinriven would feel secure. The obvious response would be a protest that he was an enterprising man, cunning and capable, someone who could build his empire as swiftly as he chose. Instead, he shrugged fluidly and helped himself to another glass of the Corellian brandy.
What can I say? Many wish to become rich, but few are willing to take the risks necessary to do it. For those of us who do not fear risk, opportunities await. Opportunities given to us by those more timid, who will happily accept less than they might have had, only to keep themselves safe.
He pronounced the last word as though it were an obscenity. So you reached out to like-minded individuals, found enough to get started.
It wasn't so simple as that. It took time, Hutslayer. Time and care. What seems like a quick rise to you was, for me, the culmination of many years of work.
His explanation was logical and plausible. He delivered it easily, even with charm. Under certain circumstances, Leia might have wondered if he were telling at least a partial truth. Instead, she knew he had rehearsed this many times, beginning long ago, well before she had ever begun her investigation. I wonder who helped you rehearse. Rinriven held his goblet in one leathery hand, as if letting the moonlight sink into the wine.
My work bears benefits for all my partners, Hutslayer, whether old or new. Dear, I hope that this invitation hints at a potential new partnership.
I don't take bribes, Leia said. The next pause was even more delicate than her last, but she knew how to spin it. Yet, I question whether the Galactic Senate will continue to survive in its present form. The napkin bombing has been profoundly destabilizing. When I left, the Senate had degenerated to chaos.
Oh, we know the Senate is poised at the brink of change.
A Nikto grin was a fearsome thing, fanged and too bright.
A first senator is to be chosen. A single person with true authority. And rumor has it that you are the most likely victor.
Don't put too much stock in rumors, Rinriven. I haven't even officially said I would run.
We both know your candidacy is inevitable.
Perhaps, but my victory is not.
Now I see. We all need powerful friends, do we not?
Rinriven's beady eyes glinted.
Maybe more than one kind of influence will be needed to win this election?
Leia hadn't even thought of bluffing about that. But she seized on it as a good excuse, one Rinriven would believe in completely because it was the conclusion he'd hatched himself. We're getting ahead of ourselves. That's a discussion for a later day. Tonight is simply a matter of rebuilding bridges. He nodded in satisfaction.
Excellent. I have one point of curiosity, though. How did you find me here?
This question she was ready for. You're not the only one with contacts, you know. I knew you to be a man of refined preferences, so I put the word out in a few likely places that I'd love to hear when you were next visiting. To have this happen so quickly, however, well, it proves we have similar tastes in some things, at least. She held out her hand to gesture toward the view. Really, it was spectacular. She'd always meant to bring Han here, but they'd never made it happen. Someday, she promised herself. Someday soon. You gave me a gift when we last met, she continued. I appreciate your thoughtfulness and hope you will understand why I feel the need to return it to you. Leia reached into her pocket and pulled forth the holocube documenting her murder of Jabba the Hutt. She flicked it on, activating the scene for the very last time. Rinriven cocked his head as if scenting prey.
Surely you cannot give up such a treasure.
As I said before, Rinriven, you can't dwell on the past. At least I can't. And I would hate to deprive you of the sight of your worst enemy's death. As the translucent images writhed above the cube, Jabba's tail thrashing, his arms straining, Leia set it in front of Rinriven Dai. Besides, I don't need the hologram. I have the memory.
I envy you that, Hutt Slayer.
Rinriven leaned closer, avidly watching Jabba's death all over again. Leia suspected that was the first wholly honest thing Rinriven had said all night. In her mind, she replayed what he'd said about powerful friends. Rinriven's ego wouldn't allow him to admit he'd been sponsored into his current position, but with those two words, he'd admitted he had help. Now to find who helped him. He continued,
thoughtfulness is the sign of a good ally.
Yes, it is. Silently, she added, and the sign of a terrible enemy. Leia had known the Galactic Senate would still be recovering from the terror, anger, and suspicion ignited by the napkin bombing. But she hadn't prepared for the situation to be even worse.
I've been going through communiques ever since we entered range of Hosnian Prime, but I can't get them sorted.
Corey's fingers flew over her data pad, but she lacked Greer's absolute efficiency.
As soon as I get them prioritized, another dozen come in.
I fear Miss Sella is correct.
C-3PO sounded as close as a droid could come to mournful.
The competing requests are cross-referenced upon so many vectors. Why, there's no telling which is of primary importance.
Don't worry about it. Leia settled onto one of the long padded benches of the Mirror Bright. Just start sending some of the higher priority ones my way. Make sure we have date and time stamp. We'll figure out the rest as we go. First, Ty Lin's face appeared, his usual serenity marred by weariness and doubt.
Princess Leia, I realize that you consider the mission to Ryloth of the highest importance, but this is a time when the populist candidate for first senator should be visible. The people would be reassured by your presence. They need to know that you are the rock we can rely on in such trouble.